Welcome back to Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our Hoops HD report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by a full panel tonight. We got Joby Fortson and John Sleek up here on the top row with me, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org on the bottom row, along with David Griggs and John Tytel. Yes. We've got a lot to get to tonight, yes. Also.
None of it which involves the games being played tonight.
Well, there is one game of note being played tonight between West Virginia and Oklahoma State. But, this is our Hoops HD report. We're going to talk about everything and anything going on among all of the major conferences. And I guess we should get right to it then and pull up some standings. And we're going to start talking about games and teams. And I'm trying to find the button here. Excuse me.
Okay. So, anyway, the show's on hold because Chad's button is broken.
There we go. First of all, for those who are new to the show, these are standing pages that have all kinds of information on them. You can see all the various metrics out there, including the net, which is the main tool, the RPI, which is the former tool. Joby, your J&G ratings here. Just released today for the first time this season, the KPI ratings.
The KPI is out, yes.
Yep. I want to start things off tonight in the ACC. And Joby, you're our ACC guy, actually. So let me start with you here as – I think we've kind of seen a little reverse from the ACC versus some prior years here. We are not seeing a dominant conference that's going to get 8 or 9 bids. We're seeing a conference that has 4 teams that are looking pretty good and a lot of garbage beyond that, aren't we?
Yeah, and the shame of it is that there's a way for these mid-tier teams, your NC States. Yeah, let's take NC State. That's probably the best example here. NC State was probably in, before last weekend, was probably in most bracket projections. Yeah, they were in Tytel's. They were in a number of them out there. They were in the J&G at the time. But then they go out and they just trip all over themselves. And so the problem is then Pitt, they go out. They had shown some strength. They trip all over themselves. Virginia Tech has a chance at their road win to get into the tournament. They get creamed in Charlottesville. All the teams that have a chance that actually have some quality wins, like Pitt over Louisville, all of them have stumbled against the Clemson and the Wake Forests and the Notre Dame and the Georgia Techs, the awful components of the conference. It'd be one thing if those teams were sitting constantly at 4-16 at the end of the year, but they're not going to be. Those teams are going to be actually 7-13, having taken scalps from teams who desperately can't afford those losses. And NC State is the perfect example of that. A team with a good net, you see it right there on the screen. Their net 45, that's inside the bubble type net. But the fact of the matter remains that their resume, just like last year a little bit, is lacking and gets creamed by a weaker ACC. If this was a stronger ACC, I'd have a lot of hope for NC State. Because it's weaker in ACC, I do not.
Tytel, let me bring you in here. Are we looking at a potential for only 4 bids out of this league now?
Yes, but that's due to the near unprecedented fact that if you look at the bottom of the standings, have you ever seen
holy crap, Tytel coming through at 90.
We had a little volume problem. I was trying to get that adjusted.
Too loud? Too soft?
That's a lot better. Keep going. Yeah,
sorry. the near unprecedented bottom of the tier of the conference with 2 Hall of Fame coaches in Boeheim and Williams who are both losing record in conference play, 8-6 overall. Numbers across the board are terrible. I mean, I know that you can't have a good year every year, but these teams might not make the NIT, I fear.
Yeah, and what about that North Carolina team? Rocco, the Tar Heels are just it's – I don't see it getting any better. It's bad.
Yeah, coming up ahead, I don't know if you guys saw the post-game press conference with Roy Williams. He was very disgusted with that effort against Georgia Tech. I think they got down 19-2 at home, which is really unheard of, especially against a team on probation like this. So, They got two games with Pittsburgh, a game with Clemson and VTech, and a game with Miami and NC State to close out January. The reason I mention that is because I think around February 1st, game against Boston College is when they're due to get, around that time, Cole Anthony back, which makes a tremendous difference to what this team is capable of. So two things. One, how many of those next six games can they win? Can they go 3-3? Can they maybe go 4-2 or better? Two, does Cole Anthony decide to pull a Wiseman and say, the heck with this team? We're not good enough to make a run to win the ACC tournament, and we're too far behind the eight ball to get in that large bid.
Probably not.
A lot of things at stake here these next six games.
They fell behind 19-2. I think they trailed by more than 20, but you got to give them credit. By the end of the game, they were only down by 13.
Dave, let me ask you about the top of the conference here, though. I mean, Duke and Virginia both, and Florida State, Louisville all up there. I know Louisville did suffer the loss to Florida State.
Okay.
I want to talk about Florida State in a second, but what about Virginia here? Joby's team, they beat Virginia Tech 65-39, but only 65 points.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that just continues to struggle, and you can just see how the coach is losing his grip. And I mean, things are just – I mean, in Whoville, things are really getting bad. This is a coach that's clearly on the hot seat here.
Look at this here. Joby, you're yes. A Virginia guy. Under 50 points, 46 against Maine, not in the top 17 of any poll. Is Tony on the hot seat?
Well, I will say this, that there was I think Virginia, the problem is for Virginia this year is obviously the lack of a proven score. But the just silliness. The lack of a proven score, and what's scary is that they showed a lot of ability against Virginia Tech.
And I think we lost Joby.
We lost him.
We actually did not mute him on Joby. Joby's back.
Yeah. 65 is actually pretty good, even in a guy or Jerome. But the problem is away from home. Now that they're starting to hit shots at home, away from home, I think Virginia is going to be victim, just like NC State in my prior dialogue. They're going to lose to a Clemson. Watch out in Chestnut Hill this week. The fact of the matter is Virginia has a big weakness here, and I call them, the nickname I have for them this year is they are definitely a Kenny Loggins. They're going to the danger zone because they are one loss away now with the South Carolina loss of being real trouble having that resume look like trash because they don't have the quality wins that they normally pile up out of conference rely on. And they don't have a lot of ACC teams. I mean, when they beat Carolina, everybody said, hey, this is the Virginia team. They're maybe not a national title contender, but they're a protected seed level. Look at what they did to Carolina. Well, that doesn't look so great right now. So.
Okay. Well, let me bring you in here. And I'm going to pull up a couple of resumes on the screen of Duke and Florida State, especially this Florida State team on the right here. Team that I had a lot of questions about. Very impressive going to Louisville this weekend.
Yeah, if Virginia's song is going to be the danger zone, Florida State has to be I'm All Right, because now Leonard Hamilton has beaten Chris Mack for the third straight time after a loss in the 2017 NCAA tournament. First, there was the Noles knocking off Xavier as the number one seed, and last year they lose their only matchup at Florida State. And I believe the Puppet was also quick to point this out. Florida State was an underdog in all three games, but the only strike the Noles really have at this point was their season opening loss at Pitt, which is going to be somewhat forgivable. A loss to Indiana, certainly understandable here. But you look at some of the other wins like Purdue and Florida, starting to lose a little bit of luster for Florida State here.
I don't know. I've had so many questions about this Florida State team. I'm buying in now. I'm kind of all in on this team.
That Tennessee win is just looking better and better by the day.
Tennessee is going the wrong way with injuries.
Yeah, the committee should and will take into account that when they beat them, they weren't as decimated with injuries. But how about Duke, like beating Michigan State? I mean, two really, really big wins away from home for them. I mean, really looking good.
Upcoming schedules on the screen here, and Rocco, you mentioned North Carolina's upcoming schedule. Saturday, they're going to be hosting Clemson. 0-59 is Clemson all-time in Chapel Hill. Is this a year, their 60th attempt ever to win a game out there?
It's as good a chance as any. I think they had a close call, like, what, was it last year or the year before? Where they
2 years ago, yeah.
Many years ago. Haven't, like, the last two or three come down to the last possession or gone into overtime or something like that? I mean, it's not like they've been getting rolled. They just haven't won.
Right. Yeah, so you know the Clemson locker room's got this circled, and they'll be fired up and really more confident than ever heading into Chapel Hill. But, big week for the Tar Heels, like I mentioned earlier. As well, we're going to see, I think, Georgia Tech's got a chance to knock off North Carolina and Duke back-to-back. That would be just make sense for what kind of season we've seen so far.
Well, Georgia Tech's appeal of their – postseason ban is still pending. They have wins at Carolina and NC State, so you know if they get that appeal granted, I'm not throwing this team off the bubble quite yet. At that point,
they better run through the ACC without mistakes. Because 7-7, including some of their losses, are just not
very good strength of schedule. Though they played the 16th best schedule in the nation on that, so
yeah.
But anyhow, in the Diamond Head.
Let's roll over to the Big Ten here, and Tytel, let me bring you back in. And kind of the opposite of the ACC, we've got a conference here where, other than maybe Nebraska and Northwestern down there at the bottom, everybody's kind of on the board, aren't they?
Yes, and I have to apologize to the Badgers because they, as Joby pointed out earlier, were, I think, my worst omission because I didn't give them enough credit for beating the Buckeyes, and clearly for killing Ryder. I mean, that's a huge win right there. They really are playing like a protected seed right now, and I mean they got miles to go. We're in early January, but I think I focused too much on the 9-5 and not as much on the strength of schedule, which is 6, and a ton of the other metrics which are very high up there. So as much as I want to say Rutgers is the surprise, I think Wisconsin is giving them a run for their money.
Oh, thank you. I love the Rutgers shout out, Sierra. And, David, though, on the top of this conference, Michigan State, this team has just started to look so good the past couple weeks here.
Yeah, it took them a while to, like, for the rubber to hit the road. They kind of, like, fell out of their – off the horse right out of the gate. But, like, they are really on a tear now. I know that they were at home, but, I mean, they kept Michigan at arm's length or further for that whole game. And I think they've been looking more and more like the top five team or that everybody kind of expected them to be all along. And – better late than never, but they really weren't that late. Nobody else in the conference, as good as some of the other teams have looked anywhere nearly as good as Michigan State has this past couple weeks.
They have looked really good. And on the other end of that, I think Joby is, what the hell happened in Illinois last night when the Boilermakers went in there?
I absolutely. Yeah, you see, and we talked about Virginia, and yeah, I always talk about their road worries because the real road worry was that Purdue game, and so you think Purdue's really good. Purdue really isn't that good a team. I think it's what it comes down to. I fear that Purdue, there are not going to be 12 Big Ten teams in the tournament. Somebody is going to have to lose conference games. Someone's going to have to finish. 8-12, 7-13. The Boilers, I mean, remember they lost, they lost to Nebraska as well. I mean, this team doesn't have it. And I don't want to bury them completely, but the fact that their overall record out of conference was only 7-4, they don't have that. They have a good Virginia win, but they don't have a lot to fall back on making mistakes in the Big Ten, because when you're 7-4 and let's say you go 9-11 and lose that first round Big Ten game, you're a 500 team. You're not making the dance, period.
Right.
And Rocco, let me ask you about the other team up here that had the nice win this week, was Penn State. I guess it was technically a neutral court in Philadelphia, although I called a home court anyhow, with a win over Iowa by 3 points. But I was impressed that they've got a huge game at Rutgers coming up tomorrow night.
They do.
Wow, Penn State at Rutgers is a huge game.
I feel like the Atlantic 10 bizarro world are we living in?
It is crazy.
That's a fight to see who can wear white. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, yeah, the thing about Penn State, you know, the first time I really started digging into the resumes last week is this is a better resume than some of the teams that are pretty highly ranked. Like, I think they have a better resume than the Louisvilles, the Marylands, even the Villanovas of the world. They've got some really nice wins, including beating Maryland and winning at Georgetown, and of course beating teams like Alabama and Yale, and playing Ole Miss tight. So. I like what this team has done. They've got a quiet confidence about them, which is unusual. It's almost the opposite of what we've expected from a Pat Chambers team. The way that they were able to close out Iowa, I watched the last 10 minutes of that game in the Palestra. Very impressive. Iowa was one of the hottest teams in the country coming into that game. This certainly looks like a tournament team. But Joby mentioned, not only wearing white, they could actually be a protected seed later on this year.
Yeah, Stalika, the rest of these games here coming up this week in the Big Ten, I mean, you could pretty much circle everything other than Nebraska at Northwestern as a game worth watching, can't you?
Yep, but I think in particular we have to circle Ohio State now thanks to their sudden two-game losing streak against West Virginia and Wisconsin, because now they get road games coming up at Maryland and Indiana, who have not lost at home yet all year. So suddenly are we going to be looking at a possible hangover that continues with a four-game losing streak for the Buckeyes by week's end?
Yeah, it should be an interesting week for a lot of these teams here also. I mean, the Michigan State hosting Minnesota, going to Purdue. David, you had another thought?
Oh, no, just another game. I mean, I know you said they were all interesting. Is this second one? I mean, I know that Rutgers has a showcase game tonight. I mean, they're good, and they're hosting a ranked team at home, and I hope that the place is rammed full and loud. But
already sold out. Go ahead.
You know, another test is that game at Illinois, simply because it's a road game against sort of a middling level, bubble-ish team. Can they go on the road and beat? I think, can you go on the road and beat a bubble team? That's almost as much of a test, and it adds something to the profile that they really need. So this is a big week for Rutgers, and I don't think that is a sentence that has ever been uttered on this podcast.
I did a bracket yesterday that I put up on the website. Is the first time since I graduated Rutgers that I put Rutgers in a bracket ever. I didn't know. It was very strange for me to do. I didn't even want to do it. I didn't know if I would jinx them or not. I probably did, but wow.
Tytel needs to get on board. Tytel needs to
Tytel.
Bad, you know.
You beat Penn State, I'm going to get very interested in putting you on the board.
Thank you. So let's take a look here. Let's jump over to the other conference that you can pretty much put everybody in this conference with maybe one exception to the NCAA tournament. That's the Big East here. And Tytel, what a crazy, crazy season this is looking to be in the Big East. When you look at everybody has great records other than Providence, who just quietly went 2-0 last week.
You know? This has been fascinating. So two of the storylines for me, Butler – literally like a couple points away from being undefeated with a loss to an amazing Baylor team. You see all these single-digit rankings. That's not a fluke. I think that's legit. And on the bottom of the scale, sadly, Georgetown, they won six straight in December for the first time in 8 years. And I was just starting to believe. And then you see where we're at.
Yeah.
And losing kind of badly in both those games, too.
Yeah, Georgetown, I think maybe all the attrition, all the players they've lost have started to catch up with them. I think that, unfortunately, things are not going to get better there. And, Rocco, what about DePaul, who had that great start and has now started out 0-2 in conference play, including a home loss to Providence?
Yeah, and all three of their losses now on their home court, as they lost to Seton Hall and Providence to start conference play, and, of course, lost to Buffalo following that big Texas Tech home win. So I think DePaul's coming back down to earth a little bit. They did not look that strong or organized in the Providence lost. You know, big game coming up with St. John's on Saturday. Two teams that are 0-2. I think it's almost – you don't want to call it desperation mode, because all of these teams outside of Providence built up a great resume in the non-league. It's a pressure-packed game with both being 0-2. But DePaul's resume probably – really close to the cut line right now. They're going to need to pick up at least eight Big East wins or more to stay in that conversation.
right. And David, let me ask you about another team here. Marquette loses to Creighton, but then bounces back with a win over Villanova. I think I like both these teams, both Marquette and Creighton, I guess, and Villanova a lot here.
Yeah.
I do. Now, Marquette, I mean, I think that they've at least shown that they can win big games at home. Have they shown us yet that they can win away from home? Mm-hmm. You know, is it a legit, really, really good top 25 caliber team, or is it just a team that can beat really highly ranked teams at home? There is a bit of a difference there. But yeah, I mean, they're certainly better than I thought that they would be coming into the season.
And Joby, how about Seton Hall up there at the top of the standings with Butler?
The Georgetown game that was referenced earlier, I think, was a watershed moment for Seton Hall this season. Not just because they beat Georgetown, it's because Miles Powell, we think of this team as a one-man team in a lot of ways because Powell's that good. He had an off night. He had a very off night. But people like Romero Gill was the leading scorer, and he was awesome. As Titel will attest, because he watches Georgetown closely, Yurt Seven has had an amazing year up to this point. Didn't have an amazing night, and it was because of Gill shutting him down from the defensive end, but also putting in, I think, 17 in that game. Seton Hall, if they can find multiple scores, and Kale had a good night, if they can find multiple scores to go with Powell, this becomes a ridiculously dangerous team, and all those preseason expectations, which had them around like 10, bordering the top 10, could come to fruition. You know, I was a little skeptical that could happen, but that Georgetown game really opened my eyes for what this team can be. And we'll see if it was a one-off or if they can go forward. But they could. They could give a challenge to those Butler Bulldogs and those Villanova Wildcats come this season in.
Salika, you are our Xavier guy. They picked up the nice win over St. John's. Very interesting week for them, hosting Seton Hall and then hosting Creighton, who's going to be coming off a home game against Villanova earlier in the week. So huge weeks for both those teams, both Creighton and Xavier.
Well, this was one of the games that Xavier had dropped last year, where they began their slide in January with a game against Seton Hall where they led by double digits but were unable to seal the deal last year against Powell and company. So they're going to need to avenge that game. And by the same token, there's going to be no rest for the weary afterwards taking on what's been a quietly hot Creighton team.
Yeah, we've got a lot more to get to here. I think we could probably do another 20, 30 minutes on the Big East. But let's move things over to the Big 12, actually, and – David, you know, this is a conference that I think the Big East has kind of replaced them as the conference is going to, with 9 or 10 teams looking like they're tournament bid teams. Because I think we've got 4 or 5 at the top here, but not the 7 or 8 that we've had in past years at this time.
Yeah, Oklahoma State definitely not looking the part in the last couple of weeks, and that includes tonight in front of a crowd of dozens, most of whom left probably shortly after the game started, because this has just been such an ugly game going on right now.
Yeah, getting crushed by West Virginia as we record this. Go ahead.
Right. So West Virginia, their two losses, one of them was at Kansas and the other was, help me out, but it was pretty good. And I'm really big.
St. John's.
Yeah. And Texas, yeah, St. John's. Texas Tech kind of kicking it into the gear. Kansas and Baylor really good. I'm still sort of on board with the Sooners being inside the bubble. But, yeah, there's that fine line. My question is, what about this Texas team? Because everybody's sort of writing them off as a bust and, like, downhill. They barely missed the tournament a year ago against one of the toughest strength of schedules. They actually had some really high-caliber wins last year. And 10-3, while not – the best, is certainly within striking distance. I mean, I still think they have a good, realistic path to landing inside the bubble here.
David, they did. They were national invitational tournament champions last year. So.
Yeah.
Rocco, let me ask you that question. Though. Texas there. I have the profile on the left here. My problem with them is you want at Purdue, which is not looking as strong as it was the way Purdue's playing, and you got nothing else in the top two tiers.
Right.
They've got nothing accomplished if Purdue continues to slide. They have a 228 non-conference strength of schedule, which is always going to be problems if you're near the bubble. But on the positive side, Luke Yaklich came over from Michigan with the Coach Beilein transition. The defense has improved a lot. If they can just get some scoring going, I like the potential of them developing and coming together and getting some big wins with his impact. But the pressure's on for Shaka and company, and now it's crunch time.
Joby, how about Oklahoma? I'm going to put the profile up here on the right.
Yeah, Oklahoma. Wow.
It wins against Louisville. Yeah,
Oklahoma has a sneaky, in my opinion, a sneaky good resume that folks haven't noticed. You'll see all of their losses are like high tier ones. Yeah, you know, so it's like you almost say, well, at Creighton versus Stanford, Wichita State, even though they might not be the name brands on those losses. Now, putting the wins together, they need to put wins against tournament teams in conference. But neutral court Minnesota, neutral court Oregon State, neutral court Missouri, those are very solid loss, solid wins that will – I think at least one, maybe two, might sneak into the tournament at the end of the year off that group to give them a solid out-of-conference base. But then they have the fortune, good fortune of playing in the Big 12 and being able to play their way in. This is the exact opposite of Virginia, who has a very similar out-of-conference resume for the most part, except for a loss against South Carolina. This is the exact opposite because you will get opportunities in the Big 12 to get quality wins. There isn't a lot of dreck in the Big 12 once again. Yeah, Kansas State's not that great. So, but even Oklahoma State is losing to West Virginia tonight. That's a quality win if you go into Stillwater and win. That's going to be a tier one win.
Go ahead, David.
Yes, I hate to call out a mistake here, but Iowa State is 7-8, Chad, not 7-6. And if you'll pull up their profile, I will demonstrate why.
I don't think I really want to do this, but I will, David. I will go ahead and pull up Iowa State's profile for you.
Yes.
It'll be loading here in a second. Go ahead.
Okay, it's loading. And you will observe their loss. There it is, to Florida A&M. You only counted that as one loss.
This was one of the most unbelievable losses I have seen. We have had some incredible losses this season, including Evansville knocking down Kentucky, and we had Stephen Foster at Duke. Florida A&M winning at Iowa State may have blown all those away. I mean,
yes, really. We talked about it on Under the Radar. I just wanted to work it into this show. So that's all. You may continue with the actual show.
Tytel, Texas Tech is a team that could use a few top-tier wins. They've got the Louisville win, but not much else. They've got a real interesting week ahead with Baylor and at West Virginia.
It's an excellent point. So you look at the strength of schedule. They're the worst in this conference, and it's not even close. That changes very quickly. Tuesday, host Baylor, and then Saturday, go to the Mountaineers. The amazing thing is that Chris Beard is doing this with a bunch of freshmen. He starts two in Jamias Ramsey and Terrence Shannon. It's four others who are a big part of the rotation. Good defensive team, beating Louisville on national TV by double digits at the Garden on December 10th, really raised the profile. The losses are excusable all away from home, so a bit of a home court hero, but two in overtime and one to Iowa in a neutral court. I don't think they're going 2-0 this week. If they do, we're talking like a top four seed. They'll probably go 0-2, but if they can scratch out a win, start to believe.
And, of course, I think we'd be remiss, Sleek, if we don't bring up the feature game of them all here on Saturday, Baylor at Kansas.
Well, Baylor and Kansas, this is certainly going to be the top two teams right here. But I think another team that could sneakily be 3-0, depending on how things shake out. How about the TCU Horned Frogs with a game coming up at Kansas State and then game at home against Oklahoma State? They couldn't have asked for an easier start to conference play, but in all seriousness, the Horned Frogs have looked much better since they got blown away by Xavier, even if the final score didn't reflect it. But look what they did since then. They blew George Mason out, who only had one loss at the time, and then they get a close win against Iowa State to start off Big 12 play.
Well, Rocco, real quick, you want to give us a prediction on this Baylor-Kansas huge matchup? I mean, two of the top four teams of the nation.
Yeah, Fog Allen Fieldhouse. I'm going with the Jayhawks in that one.
All right. Let's jump over to the Pac-12. And Rocco, before I get to you, let me start with Tytel here. And and it's Arizona
circle the game
team
on the right, Chad. Circle it big over there.
There's a lot to dissect here, Chad.
A lot to dissect. I'm going to start with Arizona, though, who picks up the dominating win over the in-state rivals in the top 25 now at number 24 in both polls. Good week for Zona.
It is probably going to get destroyed in Eugene on Thursday, but to be honest, I couldn't care less because beating Bobby Hurley by 28 is the highlight of anybody's season, right?
Should be. And Rocco, you know I got to come to you next. A dominating win last night over USC following losing a bye game at home.
I remind you.
I mean, I hate to
North Carolina. Put that out there.
I hate to pound the obvious statement, but this is a sign of a young team, right? You come out one night against UCLA conference opener, a team that just got beat at home by double digits to Fullerton. And, you know, McDonald's All-American Jaden McDaniels goes out and gets three fouls that were just head scratchers in the first half, then gets a technical foul from the bench to start the second half and fouls out with 16 minutes to go and only scores 3 points. It was, there was a lot on Twitter said. Beyond all that, the Huskies did not take care of the ball. It created in our inner circles within my Seattle friends a lot of deep diving. The Huskies rank in the 300s in a great KenPom statistic called non-steal turnovers, which basically consists of throwing the ball away, shot clock violations, offensive fouls. And that's exactly what you saw in the UCLA game. So it was an awful, awful nightmare. And a guy, a freshman from UCLA, Kaiman, who had only played no more than 10 minutes in any game this year, comes and hits 7 3-pointers. So go figure. Yeah. And then, of course, they turned on the Jets last night, and USC barely scores 40 points.
So yeah, USC figure. Team that I'm kind of liking right now. Yeah. But Stalica, Colorado, huge win Thursday over Oregon, have a big lead over Oregon State last night, and they completely threw that game away.
Well, here's the thing about Colorado. I think it's 5 tries now that they're unbeaten at home against the Ducks, and then following up, it's a little more baffling because I figured, okay, they've got a double-digit lead. They'll probably go ahead and coast to a win here, but not so fast as Wayne Tinkle and company. Now the Beavers actually have their own quality win for the first time this year, and we may be seeing parallels to the team that included. I think it was Tinkle and Gary Payton II that made the NCAA tournament for the first time in a quarter century.
Yeah, and Joby at the top of the standings there, Stanford. I mean, are they for real? They only beat Cal, I know, but are they for real?
Yeah, that's not why. That's not what to look at for their schedule. If you pull up their profile, you can't find better losses among a team of 2 losses because we just spent time talking how wonderful that Butler team is. Look at that score, you know, when they lost to Butler. Neutral court at 1 point. They lose to Kansas. They get beaten solidly by Kansas.
Yeah, they did not mess around losing to Kansas.
Yeah, but the fact is that Oklahoma team that I was kind of high on, saying, ooh, this has a lot of opportunity, Stanford ran out of the building. And Stanford is actually – it's interesting. They are in a similar position as Oklahoma in that they're done without a conference. They didn't stub their toe. As a matter of fact, they have some really – you know, the losses – people just will completely forget because those will be tier one losses, you know, come March, no matter what. And they have a very strong Oklahoma win, and they'll have opportunities to clear up what's being highlighted on the screen there, tier one and tier two in the top 12. Yep. They have house money that they can now spend, and now they got past Cal, you know, which is one of those awful stub your toe moments. They aren't going to be stubbing their toe a whole lot, maybe Washington State or something, UCLA. But the fact of the matter is they have all these chances to pick up, you know, the Utah win at Utah or, you know, the beat Rocco's Huskies at home. You know, they have a lot of opportunities because the Pac-12, for the first time in a long time, is a solid and relatively deep conference with – multiple bids. I think you're looking at 5 bids right now, at least.
I got a question for Joby and our other raid execs. Can we go back to that profile, Chad?
Sure.
This actually isn't a joke. If you're expecting it, I'm sorry. Joby, you know, with that, the NET, for instance, it's divided into 5 parts, and one of it is sort of that mysterious adjusted opponent thing. And you see some lopsided wins there, particularly Santa Clara and William and Mary, against teams that, while aren't very good, have won a lot of games. Is that inflating the net?
I think it's the lack of losses. I really do. I can't disagree, because, you know, the Dons and William Mary and Santa Clara are underrated wins. I think they're quality wins. It's a shame they're
Well, they're wins against teams that have won a lot of games, right, albeit against
– I think all three of those teams are solid, and you guys could talk under yeah. the radar. I think they've won a lot of games because they're solid teams that will do well in their respective – the WCC or the CAA. I don't think Stanford probably is, and I'll be biased and go with the J&G. I think Stanford's more where the J&G has them. Which
yes, is, as do I. I do not think Stanford is a protected seat.
But I do think Stanford is a legitimate team to consider. If we start into the season today, I think a white jersey, a 7 or 8 seed, is very realistic for them
on any
bracket.
Well, if we end the season today, we're going to be talking about at least 8 teams in this conference as being on the board, and we're used to the Pac-12 being a two teams on the board.
I think nine teams would be on the board. I think Arizona State's on the board. I think they're on the board.
I'll give you that. I've got the upcoming schedule. You know, we already mentioned Arizona, big road trip to Oregon and Oregon State this week. That's probably the games we've got to highlight there. The Utah-Colorado game on Sunday maybe as well. Washington-Stanford, a lot of big games. Again, kind of backwards here. I'm not used to saying a lot of big games this week in the Pac-12, and we're saying that this year.
You said global warming wasn't real.
Salika, let me go back to you as we move over to the SEC real quick here and talk about one of two remaining undefeated teams in the nation here in Auburn, who only – had the one game this weekend that they beat Mississippi State, but kind of on the other hand, the SEC ended up losing 3-1 in their little mini challenge series with the Americans. So
yeah, but the one game the SEC did win, it was a huge one for Georgia and company going to Memphis. So the Tigers suddenly, they lose a little bit of clout on their star, but by the same token, the Bulldogs, ever since the loss to Dayton and Maui, they've quietly been putting together a pretty decent team themselves. And Anthony Edwards, it had to be a coming out party for him and the team down in Memphis here. So they're going to be a team to watch now.
Absolutely. And Tytel, let me ask you about this Georgia team. With the Memphis win, they're a tournament team now. Tom Crean coming out of nowhere, kind of.
I think they're looking pretty bubblicious. It was a pretty big win. Obviously, it would have been bigger if Wiseman was there, but that's not their fault. Losses can all be explained away, although losing by 20 at Arizona State I don't love. Obviously, plenty of chances to get better at the game. I mean, the schedule is brutal. It's Kentucky at Auburn. I mean, especially coming off the huge win, both invigorating for the program and the resume, but also emotionally. I assume that this is going to be something where they're just going to fall off the cliff because they're playing a good team after a huge win. I certainly hope they can get it put together, but I fear that it's going to be a rough week for Georgia.
Well, Rocco, how about this undefeated Auburn team here? How long does this last?
That's a good question. I mean, if you want to crown them for being the kings of quadrant 2, I think we can give them a crown right now because they've got 7 wins in that quadrant. They have not even played a game in the first quadrant, so it's really tough to gauge. I think out of all those 7 wins, none of those teams are in the field right now. They have a lot of big ones coming up, so we're going to learn a lot. The Auburn program, as we saw over the years and last year in the Final Four, of course, is as solid as it's ever been, and I don't have any qualms about them making the tournament, but I do feel it's hard to rank them. We don't know if they're a top 5 team or just a top 20 team, and that's what needs to shake out over the next few weeks.
I will say this about Auburn. I like them more at this point this year than I did at this point last year. This was a team that really thundered down the stretch, starting in maybe the week leading up to the SEC tournament and then all the way through the Final Four when they thought they had won the game but hadn't. Shout out to Joey for that. But what's interesting after
Kyle Guy's jersey behind me. So that
yeah, yeah. All right, perfect. is – You know, Vanderbilt is kind of a sludge, but then they play the Georgia team we just talked about. They go to Alabama, who has won 5 of 7, almost won at Florida, actually kind of blew that game, totally but a tied team that's playing really well. So I agree. I think we're going to learn a lot about them here in the next couple weeks.
Okay. Joby, Kentucky over there on the right just blew out Missouri to start conference play. Have they turned the corner?
I think, yes, I think Kentucky's better than the metrics show. And this is where – but I think Kentucky's going to be a very interesting case study because you have them – most people in the polls, I can't remember exactly, but the polls have them bordering the top 10, which I don't think is outrageous for a pollster to vote that way. But look at the resume ratings and the net and all that. It's all 50s, mine are 27. You know, it's because if you look at the resume as it exists, they have some really good wins with Michigan State and Louisville, but they also have a remarkable – you know, we talked about the Iowa State, Florida A&M, and, you know, Evansville's starting to get to the point of a bad hiccup, you know, at home that is going to be a drag. They have the ability, especially with their out of – conference wins against some very elite teams. They have the ability to be that protected seed, eventually move to a one seed if they run through the conference. But if they trip up repeatedly, which sometimes a young Kentucky team can do, if they do that, don't think we're going to be seeing Kentucky match their ranking when the group of 16 comes out in February because I think the committee might think worse of them than the sports writers.
Well, if they start losing to – oh, sorry, go ahead, Chad. I want to interrupt you again. If they start losing to Alabama and South Carolina and Arkansas, I mean, their ranking will drop.
The down press is not working.
For their resume, their ranking is already inflated, I think. But maybe not their talent. We'll see.
Just want to note here that there is that one remaining non-conference game for most of these SEC teams with the SEC Big 12 day on January 25th. Kentucky, a real interesting road trip to Texas Tech. Team that I put on the left there, though, only one loss, Stalika. Arkansas, nobody's talking about them, really. They're not in the top 25 of any of the polls, but just the loss to Western Kentucky, and that's it.
Yeah, but we also pointed this out on the last show where they came from behind to a win at Indiana. So that's going to be their first win of significance, and their win at Georgia Tech slowly looking a little bit better. But this week they were just merely holding serve with their conference opening win against A&M.
Right. Let me just take a quick – let's take a quick look at the upcoming week here in the SEC. Rocco, what are we looking at here, this – Kentucky-Georgia game tomorrow night, maybe? Is that what we're circling?
I think that looks like a really good game. I mean, Georgia has got to be riding sky high after the win in Memphis. I'm sure it's a sold-out or close to sold-out crowd. It's going to be rocking. Most excitement they've had around there in a long time. And then I think you got to look at Arkansas going on the road to LSU. LSU coming off the win over Liberty, maybe shaking off some of the cobwebs they had in November and December. Big test for both teams there. And then I think as we look at the weekend, I guess, you know, Florida's sitting right on the bubble. They've got a trap game at South Carolina that could get interesting.
Trap game at South Carolina, maybe a trap game at Missouri too. So it could be a big week for the Gators to try to pick up two nice road wins.
Don't you mean Missouri has a trap game hosting Florida?
Maybe, yeah. The other half of that SEC American was the American, where SMU and Wichita State picked up a couple of wins. And, David, you're making all kinds of noises over there. And I wanted to talk a little Wichita State. I wonder if that's where you wanted to go off.
Yeah, I love this Wichita State team. Their only loss to West Virginia, I think it was. And in a game where they didn't win it, they made a pretty good showing for themselves. And they've beaten everybody else. And the numbers keep getting better. 13-1 on the year, 27-5 now in their last 32 games. Finally cracking the rankings. Probably not ranked high enough. Probably should have been ranked sooner. I noticed you liked them in your bracket today.
I love this Wichita State profile. I really like what this team is doing. And I guess with them in Memphis, I think you at the top of the standings here. But Tytel, when you look beyond those top two teams, is there anybody else that's really shown you enough to be even on the even a bubble team beyond those two?
Certainly not SMU. Houston's a question mark, but SMU, that 11-2 record is trash. Granted, losing at Georgia in double overtime by two is looking like a quality loss. The 17-point loss at home to Georgetown is getting worse by the minute. They haven't beaten anybody in the KenPom top 100, and they traveled to Houston a week from Wednesday. I like Tim Jankovic a lot, and he's got some nice pieces there, but he lost a lot last year, and I think that it's just going to be – they don't have a ton of seniors, so next year should be okay, but 11-2, that's – don't look at the record. They're not a tournament team.
Yeah, they're not. I don't think Temple is. I mean, the disgusting 70-44 loss to Tulsa was just
Temple.
Awful.
Temple. What are you doing?
Temple. Tytel. Temple. Go.
Every year this happens with Temple. The original, when we start calling teams, or I at least name a team a glass tiger because they have. They're a two-hit wonder. It's Temple. Well, they have one hit against Maryland. Mark my words, they're going to beat Memphis or Wichita State, but two-hit wonders don't make the tournament. Get out, Temple. God.
I'll tell you that I think the biggest story, Stalica, in this conference this year is not going to be a team that makes a tournament, but the job that's done in Tulane.
Yeah, Tulane suddenly – they had, I think, was it one win of significance out in Myrtle Beach, but now at home where – none of their students were in attendance for the game against Cincinnati, yet there were, I think, about 10 or 20 UC students. I want to talk about a reversal of fate here where the Green Wave actually get a win against a Jekyll and Hyde Bearcat team. Yeah, Could we possibly be looking at a year where UC and UCLA end up meeting in either the NIT or, God forbid, the CEI finals?
Yeah, I don't even know. That they're going to make either of those events either. But
that is like Ron Hunter, probably very much underappreciated as a coach because he's never really won big on a national stage. But IUPUI,
except the game where he fell down off his stool. But go ahead.
Yes. Well, IUPUI, a transitional team from NAIA. He brought them a long way. Georgia State, while they'd been good at times, nothing to the degree that they were while he was there. And now he's at Tulane, which may have had a good team under Perry Watson 30 years ago, but is so irrelevant that people in New Orleans don't even know they're there. And yet he's winning. And you almost wonder, like, why this guy never got better opportunities. He's a phenomenal coach.
And just FYI, you're thinking of Perry Clark.
Perry Clark, thank you.
Perry Watson had an NCAA team at Detroit Mercy after leaving Michigan.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Okay, yeah.
Rocco, the game of the season so far in the American is coming up Thursday night, though, Memphis at Wichita.
I fully expect Wichita to protect the home court. They've done it all year, and they've already had a bunch of big games there. If there is any knock on Wichita, is they've only played one road game so far. So we'll see how they come back from that win or lose to get out to Connecticut just 2 days later in what promises to be a pretty good atmosphere at UConn, despite UConn's struggles. Another one to look out for, too, is Memphis's follow-up game on Sunday, which will be at a South Florida team that's improving, a team I got to see in person a couple of weeks ago. Remember the name LaQuincy Rodeau. He plays tougher than nails, and that's not a layup for Memphis.
Let's talk about the one remaining undefeated team besides Auburn in the nation, and that is San Diego State. So we head over to the Mountain West. The Mountain West Conference, we've got to talk about the Con Expo Con AGG 2020 coming up.
Yeah.
in Las Vegas, Nevada. Look at this event. If you need a tractor, if you need heavy equipment,
it is there. Yes.
At Thomas and Mack Center, March 14th to 20th, as a result of which the Mountain West Tournament will be a week earlier than normal. But, David, do you want to discuss the San Diego State team that had, I think, one of the most impressive wins of the entire week when they – well, the score wasn't huge at the end of the day. I think they just dominated this game.
They dominated the game more than what the score indicated, and the score does not indicate that it was a close game. It was not a close game. If you look at San Diego State, can we pull up their profile here while we're discussing them?
Sure.
Essentially, they crack the top 10. I don't think that they're overrated. I don't know. They're probably going to end up getting higher just by default. I don't know if they're actually like a number one seed caliber team. But when you look at that, you know, the win at BYU, BYU might not lose but two or three games at home all year. Utah State would be the same. They have the wins against Utah, Iowa away from home. That's a pretty solid profile. All of their tough games are already behind them, and they've already won them. They kind of have, nobody in the top 50, if I'm looking at that right, left.
Right. The only game that I'm concerned about, honestly, for San Diego State the rest of the way, honestly, is the road game at New Mexico, just because it's so hard to go to the
Pit. Yeah.
Like, they get by that one, Titel, they could be undefeated heading into the NCAA tournament, and they're clearly a one seed then, aren't they?
Clearly, but I'm telling you, I agree with you that New Mexico is not an easy place to play. If you've ever been an undefeated team going on the road for your final regular season game, like, that has trap written all over it.
Yeah. It because, I mean, we've seen it happen before. A couple of examples come to mind. Illinois going to Ohio State, where a team going into the last week undefeated did not get through the end of the regular season. So it is far easier said than done. But essentially, we have a really good protected seed caliber team, and we've got maybe an NIT team or two, and then we've got the Southland.
Right. And Rocco, is there any point left to discussing anybody else in this conference for the NCAA besides San Diego State?
Or the Big Sky, to be fair.
I think Utah State's still in the hunt. I mean, they've got neutral court wins against LSU and Florida. I mean, if LSU and Florida keep they're on the bubble right now, but if they end up having pretty good years and get safely in, that's going to look pretty good if Utah State can pick up from their struggles last week. One of the big stories there is Nemius Queta. He missed the first game last week in their upset loss at UNLV. That was obviously a really tough game for them. And then he came back and he played a lot like the game when I saw them barely beat South Florida, where he's out there and he's putting up big stats. You read the box score and you think he's good, but when you watch the game, he's only running at like 70%, and he's not as physical and as dominant as his normal self. So Utah State's in a predicament with him all year. I don't think he's ever going to get to 100% by March. I think they got a couple more bad losses coming, unfortunately.
I agree with you. Let's take a look at the conference that has the number one team in the nation in it, in the West Coast Conference. But Joby, beyond the number one team in the nation, I'm looking at this as a multi and maybe even a three-bid conference this year from what I'm seeing.
Well, and I want to give a shout out to one of my traditional whipping boys, one of the schools I get that drives me nuts because they don't schedule anybody. Well, St. Mary's, you went out and you scheduled people, and you actually got a win, by doing it, by taking out a Wisconsin team that now is solidly in the tournament. So when you go out and you stub your toe against Pacific, like they did,
in four overtimes.
We had a quadrupler.
Controversial goaltending.
Loss, and they have a bad loss to Winthrop on top of that. But the fact is, they are still – does anyone think they're not a tournament team if the season ended today, even with those two bad losses? No. And the reason why is because they actually went out and they scheduled – and they beat Utah State. And they beat Wisconsin. They actually scheduled some teams. And and their loss to Dayton doesn't look bad. So, the fact of the matter is, you go out, you schedule, it's worth it. And don't tell me, St. Mary's, no one will play you. Well, if that's the case, play Utah State. And you get a team, you get a reasonable win off it.
And the other good thing for St. Mary's is they caught Wisconsin at the right time.
Yeah.
Good for the Gales. They deserve it. And they deserve a bid right now. Right now. We'll do the Pacific thing over and over again, but yes.
And you got there. I got the Gales on the left there, Titel. I've got BYU on the right there also. The Houston win is okay. There's nothing really bad on that profile, and they've got their chances with the two St. Mary's, the two Gonzaga games still to come.
Yes, and the X factor is the big factor of Yoli Childs in that, without him, you saw, they lost two good teams and then a couple in a tier two. He could end up being the conference player of the year in a good conference with good players on good teams. I think he missed 8 or 9 games after declaring for the draft and then with the agent and the whole thing. He's really coming back with a vengeance, could end up averaging a double-double.
Hey, David, we have one of the games of the season in the West Coast Conference this week, and it does not involve Gonzaga.
Yes, it was a quadruple overtime.
No, I'm talking about coming up this week. We had the quadruple overtime, but coming up Thursday night, we've got a fascinating game, I think.
Well, what do we got?
BYU at St. Mary's, round
yes.
one.
Yes, well, St. Mary's, I don't know if you know this, but their last game went in, it was a quadruple, the first one in almost 2 years. But, yeah, really good team. I mean, that's a big win because it's two teams that they don't have – their opportunities at quality wins are somewhat limited, not entirely limited, but somewhat limited. Gonzaga is really a really steep, steep hill to climb. This one's more winnable, so it's a resume building opportunity for both teams.
Well, I'll tell you that Gonzaga has looked vulnerable in their first couple of conference games. They have not blown away their opponents. They've got two road games at San Diego and at Pacific this week. I think this is actually really needs to turn on and blow out and start rolling in these games, or we're going to start having some serious questions about whether they belong number one, even if they keep winning.
True. Are they just kind of bored right now? I mean, because there's been times where this team has looked fantastic, and this week was not one of it.
I don't know the answer to that question, but, I mean, that could be it. One other conference to go through real quick here, Rocco, the Atlantic 10 Conference. At the top here is a Dayton team that I still think is really, really good as well.
Dayton, very good team. I mean, look at their scores and their wins. I mean, they do not – I mean, obviously they struggled a little bit with St. Joe's yesterday.
First half against St. Joe's was not good.
not good. But, I mean, by and large, there's so much talent on this team with Crutcher, Toppin, and the like. Like, there's just a ton of landmines in the league. But I think last week I pointed out that there's a significant amount of Atlantic 10 teams in the top 100 in net, which is great news for Dayton because – if a couple of them pick up road wins, that can actually improve even from there and absorb some of the blow because I think inevitably Dayton might slip up a time or two beyond VCU games. But this Dayton team is capable of a Final Four run no matter where they're seated at the end of the regular season. So I'm all in on them as far as long-term potential.
Well, and David, go ahead.
Okay, in a really good story, Dayton has not really broken through to national relevance or national consciousness. If you watch this show, you probably know about them, but they have a really passionate fan base. Every game is sold out or close to it, and it's kind of remarkable when you consider that almost everyone else that is supported to the level that they are either has major national relevance or is a lot more accomplished. So it would be cool for them and those fans if they were to get deep into the tournament. They did go, I think it was to the Elite Eight a few years ago, but they sort of did it as an 11 seed after their bracket collapsed.
2014.
Yeah, 14. And even with that, like the city of Dayton almost burned down. I mean, they were just going absolutely insane. So there's a lot of excitement there. Are they good enough to make a Final Four run? Maybe, but they're pretty damn good.
But there were also a couple of other losing streaks that came to an end for Dayton. They had lost 8 games in a row to St. Joe's and even had a 4-game losing streak at LaSalle, oddly enough. So. Huh.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Ty, let me ask you one other question about this league. Dayton is there, obviously. VCU, I think, is at least a bubble team, if not better, right now. Is there anyone else? I mean, there have some bloated records here of likes of Duquesne, Richmond, St. Louis. Is there anyone else that you're looking at seriously, at this point at least?
No, I think Richmond is a year away, but if I can do a quick thing on VCU, I got to see them play at George Mason on Sunday, which was yesterday. So it was close in the first half. They blew him away in the second half. Marcus Santos Silva looks like the conference player of the year. I know it'll be Obi Toppin, but he played amazing. The 3 losses are all by 10 points or less to good teams. Purdue neutral site, Tennessee neutral site, Wichita State away. I understand they haven't beaten anybody of note besides LSU at home. Kudos for even getting LSU to show up to Richmond, Virginia. But I think they're going to have good success in the conference, maybe get like at least 20 wins, maybe 25. Huge game, arguably. I mean, I think VCU at Dayton on Tuesday the 14th is going to be ginormous.
Absolutely. That's probably the game to circle in terms of games upcoming this week. I don't really know that there is quite as much to circle.
You see that Davidson, Rhode Island game. Don't circle that.
Okay. Davidson, Rhode Island, do not circle that. I guess on that note, let's go ahead and pull the standings down here. I want to turn now to final thoughts. And Joby, let me start with you here. Any other final thoughts on what we've seen this past week or so far this season, even in college basketball?
we touched on it very briefly. It's already, so I won't belabor it. But it is remarkable how the ACC and Big Ten have basically flipped spots in 2 years. 2 years ago, the Big Ten had a Big Four teams that then had nobody behind them. So you had teams like Nebraska and Penn State racking up good Big Ten records, but they didn't have the heft. They didn't have the quality wins because they weren't breaking in against the Michigan States of the world. And Michigan State was even punished for their weak schedule as a three seed, despite the polls having them as possibly a number one seed. The ACC could find themselves in a very similar fate this year because you're going to see a lot of weakness, a lot of NIT level, as well as some dreck, you know, like Clemson on top of that. And so watch out, Louisville. You know, you lose these games to Florida State, that, you know, Florida State, Louisville, Duke, Virginia, you better watch out, because if you don't take care of business and you don't have the accomplishments, your fans may think, hey, we were 15-5 in the ACC. We're going to get X, Y, and Z. We're going to be a protected seed. And all of a sudden, Virginia winds up with a 5 or 6, and fans don't have a clue why that happened. I'll tell you why. You haven't been able to rack up the quality wins that you normally do in an ACC slate. The Big Ten experienced it. I guarantee you one of those four teams in the ACC, if not multiple of them, will be underseeded for what the expectations of all of us out here think, precisely because of that, because they're not looking at resume. They're looking at the name on the jersey and the conference.
Yep, I agree with you. Rocco.
Yeah, I'll try to do a rapid fire. I've got three quick final thoughts.
Okay.
So just coming back to a couple of the conversations earlier on the show. So Stanford, one thing I wanted to point out is Tyrell Terry, freshman point guard. The offense pretty much runs through him. He was dynamite the first 10, 11 games of the season. That loss to Kansas, and in the recent couple of games, there's been major adjustments happening defensively, and his production has gone down significantly. And I don't think the JNG knows all that yet, but I think that's really the main reason why Stanford's not projecting out the rest of the season unless he can get back to that caliber. But I think he was catching a lot of defenses by surprise. San Diego State, want to move on to them as well. Although it looks on paper like they can run the table or maybe just lose once, I want to warn everybody, these Mountain West trips are not easy, and a lot of them are played at altitude. The schools in Nevada are going to be tough to beat on the road as well. And San Diego State themselves are a team. They're a team that's dominant on defense. But if they can't hit shots, anybody can beat them. Or if they get hot against San Diego State. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for them to slip up. The last thing I want to point out is I stayed up really late Saturday watching that quadrupler. I can't even imagine how late you guys were awake.
I was up.
I do not know if you guys saw the replay of the last play of the third overtime. So one guy grabbed the net and the other guy was already goaltending him. It was a double goaltending, completely missed.
It canceled each other out. It was a double goaltend.
Oh, there it is.
But it was no goaltending. Well, what I did was that I contacted the arena and said, if you call that goaltending, we will demand that the West Coast Conference have the fourth overtime replay.
Well, no matter how you slice it, we got the quadrupler, and it was a heck of a game. Unbelievable.
It was a ridiculous miss.
But the record of 7 overtimes in a single game was not even close to being scratched there. But Stalika, let me move over to you.
It was a tough weekend for Cincinnati on multiple fronts. First, we had talked about the loss at Tulane, but unfortunately, on a more serious note, their longtime color commentator on radio, Chuck Mayshock, had passed away. Mayshock had actually played for Cincinnati in, I want to say, the 50s and 60s. He was also head coach at Central Florida for a couple of years when they transitioned from D2 up to D1. He had a nice, fiery assistant head coach by the name of Bob Huggins on his sideline. But one of the more memorable moments for Mayshock, you have to go back to the 2003 NCAA tournament. So one of the ultimate homers in the game, Bob Huggins had gotten ejected in UC's first round loss against Gonzaga. And about 5 minutes later, Mayshock also gets ejected for yelling at the referee. So I want to say the final 30 minutes of the game, Dan Horde was calling the game all by himself for WLW radio.
What I wouldn't give for the audio, because we were watching the game on television, who listens to the radio? But God, what I wouldn't pay to hear that. As far as I know, it wasn't replayed, but he was thrown out on the air while doing the game. What a story.
Tytel.
Glad we have time for me after all those final thoughts. So the great week for Arizona ended with Arizona destroying ASU. The second best thing that happened in Arizona last week was a transfer by the name of James Akinjo. It went under the radar because it was right around New Year's Day and everybody's hungover and everything and there's college football. Pick up a guy who was not just good. He was the Big East Freshman of the Year last year. He's from California, so he gets to be much closer to home, obviously, compared to D.C. Nico Mannion expected to go to the draft next year. He slides right into that starting point guard slot. I understand recently Arizona's been kind of a bigger man thing in terms of DeAndre Ayton and Aaron Gordon and Stanley Johnson, these bigger guys. I'm very interested to see if it's a good fit. I'm not sure if it will be. I certainly hope it is. But Akinjo could be one of, if not the most meaningful transfers in college basketball next year.
Yeah. Tytel, I'm a little disappointed in your final thought there. I thought you had mentioned, I believe that you were at the Washington Wizards game tonight, correct?
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. Sorry.
But I thought you would mention the fact that the highest scoring team in the city of in a basketball game in D.C. tonight was actually Bethune-Cookman with 102 points an hour. David, let me let you finish the show off.
Just real quick, we're sort of getting into halftime, or at least like, you know, a juncture in the season where we're transitioning into full-blown conference play. And it's just fun to watch how it plays out. I say that every year, but it played out this year with all of the different turnovers with number one teams going down, oftentimes to unranked teams. I don't know what the record is for number one ranked teams losing to unranked teams, but we had to have come close to breaking it this year. And on top of that, we're also getting into a place to where, after all that turnover, the current number one team might hold the spot for longer than what is normal or that what we've seen for the last several years. So all this stuff about not having a clear-cut number one could be out the window. And on top of that, you got San Diego State. I know Rocco mentioned it. It won't be easy. But they are sort of running downhill. I'm not saying they're not going to stumble once or twice, but they could be yet another dominant team that finishes on the one or two line that didn't really receive any votes, much less start off ranked in the preseason. So it's just kind of fun. Like, could you imagine in October looking into the future and seeing the way things have played out? It would be pretty wild.
No, yeah, I would have never looked at October and seen the Florida A&M winning at Iowa State. But yeah. On that note, I do want to thank everyone for joining us. We'll be back again later this week with an Under the Radar and our first bracket rundown show of the season, I believe we're doing later this week as well. But on behalf of Joby Fortson, John Stalica, Rocco Miller, check him out at bracketeer.org, David Griggs, John Tytel, I'm Chad Sherwood, and we will talk to you again real soon.